Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure. It is a truth, universally accepted, that the A&E version of Pride and Prejudice is the definitive version of Pride and Prejudice, and no other version will ever come close. But we're not watching that version today, are we?
I love how your accent just, like, tapered off the farther that went.
My British accent is what it is. Which is, what it is terrible.
I would say that the universal truth is that Austin fans will take whatever we can get our grubby little hands on as film adaptations.
Literally anything.
Yeah, except the 40s one. We don't talk about the one with Laurence Olivier. Did you ever see that one?
I didn't even know that existed.
Oh, Liv, it bad. That's not what we're watching. Because okay. It's
that was just that's not our trash. That's just dumpster fire.
In my opinion, yes. Laurence Olivier in that one is clearly the only one who's read the book.
That checks out.
Yeah, we'll get into what we are watching today later, and why this is my treasure that I've picked, but. First off, we do this to check in with each other. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah?
Doing okay. Yeah. It's been a kind of long week.
Yep.
We are in the southern United States, and so, Tropical Storm Zeta?
Yep.
Because we're that far into the list now.
Liv has been so good as to let me into her home for this part of this day and this evening because there is no power or Wi-Fi at my house. And so we're getting our Halloween viewing in a little early, but this will come out on Halloween for the good people who listen. By the way, good people who listen, we know that most of you are our loved ones who live in this area, and we love and appreciate you.
Very much.
But shout out to, like, the random three people in Ireland.
And the one in Singapore.
Who have listened to this.
We love you. Please come back and listen some more. Y'all are champs. And, yeah, anyways. especially, like, Ireland people, I love you, I love your country. I've been there once, I was ready to move after like 2 hours.
I have not been, but I desperately want to go.
I went to Dublin, and everyone that I met was like, oh yeah, like, Dublin people are the worst. And I was like, if these are your worst people, like, this country's too good to be true.
Yep.
Because they were the nicest people I've ever met in my entire life.
Everyone who I've met from Ireland is, like, they're one of the nicest or coolest people I've ever met.
They're just great. Yeah. They're so cool. So, we love you, Ireland. I've not been to Singapore. I would love to go. So, maybe one day.
Yep.
But for now, shout out to our one Singapore listener.
We'll see what the rest of this week holds. I think the worst of it has blown through.
Yeah, but, we're in the clear.
Yeah, but thank you again for allowing me stay in your home for the time being.
Oh, anytime. Mm.
If you can't guess the vibe this week, would you like to share the vibe for this week?
The vibe is tea. Pinkies up.
Oh yeah.
We heated the water in a tea kettle on the stove, like good Brits would have done, probably still do.
Some nice loose leaf chai.
We put that in a teapot, and then we got fancy antique teacups, so we are, like, living our best tea-sipping lives.
Liv's over there with her little pink teacup. I'm over here with my little mint teacup. So we match our little buddies in our trash can.
We match our little Muppets. Mm-hmm. Can we say that? Is that copyright?
I have no idea, so let's do it.
Our little Muppet figures.
Let's be real. Whenever we inevitably do a Muppet Month, which is going to happen, we have a full lineup of each of our favorite Muppet movies.
We do.
I mean, we're gonna...
Spoiler alert, they're all the same. We have very similar
tastes. We do have very similar tastes. Although, there's some good hints of material out there that I haven't seen that I know you want to introduce me to. So, when that time comes, I think we'll do enough promotional material for
Maybe
the Muppets.
Maybe they'll forgive us for designing our characters after Little Muppets.
After, let's be real, like, our little Oscar the Grouches.
They are. But, oh, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, the vibe this week is tea with pinkies up.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to spill some tea about our movie. So, Lizzie, what's the movie this week?
The movie this week is Why I Go By Lizzie.
I'm a little scared.
Not this particular movie, but the work that this is adapted from. We are watching Pride and Prejudice and Zombies this week. Because you knew I was going to pick an Austen adaptation, and I had to pick the trashiest of all the Austen adaptations.
Is this trashier than Austen Land? I've seen Austen Land once, but it's been forever.
Austen Land will eventually be on this list when it's no longer spooky season, because it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me happy. So, in my opinion, no, it is not. I do think Austen Land is the superior film.
Okay.
I think this is more... Austen Land I watch when I want to be comforted. This I watch when I have, you know, I'm not in the mood for a serious period piece, but I need some pretty dresses and miscommunications and kind of sort of love triangles, but not really. This is what I turn to. So,
quick note, fam. If you haven't noticed, just to clarify, no, we do not just watch period piece films.
This is true. We're not in a good spot right now with all of our choices.
However, a lot of our trash is period piece films.
A lot of it is.
We love them. Well, so we apologize in advance.
Can I be honest? I've watched more fantasy animated period piece films and rewatched those same films in 2020 more than any other year. And I think it's because this kind of stuff is what I watch when I want to escape reality.
Because 2020 blows and I want to be in any other year besides 2020.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have been doing that. They've been going back to movies that, you know, just make them feel happy. This was the first year in, like... Are we out of tea?
We're out of tea. Sorry, no! I don't know why I whispered that.
We're going to...
like, so upset. It's like, oh, no!
After we film this and before we start the movie, we'll go make more tea.
It's
because...
like my fifth cup.
It's really good
it's
tea.
It's really good tea.
Right? So, like, this was the first year in, like, 10 years when I went back and rewatched, like, The Sound of Music. Because I just needed to be, like, comforted, and I needed a musical, and I needed Julie Andrews to tell me everything was gonna be okay.
Right.
So
just a few of my favorite things. Yeah.
This is the year where we go back to our favorite things, and I think that's okay.
I've been unironically, like, living for the 2004 Hallmark version of Frankenstein recently.
Which I've not...
Yeah, my guilty pleasure recently has totally been the 2004 Hallmark miniseries version of Frankenstein.
Which I have not seen.
I might add it to the list. Like, it might be a two-parter, because there's a lot.
It's a miniseries, right?
Well, it's only two episodes, but each one's, like, an hour and a half long.
Gotcha.
It's not terrible, but if you did it in one go, it's like a three-hour movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot not to like about it, but the guy who plays the creature is exactly what the creature should be from the book, which most adaptations don't do. And I have a soft spot for it.
Nice.
So, I'll add it to the list.
Yep.
But,
holler.
So why don't you tell me a little bit more about this hot mess that we're about to watch.
So, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies was released in 2016. It was directed by Burr Steers. I will say, from my memories of going and seeing this in theaters, this came out in January, which is not a great time for movies, but it also came out at the same time as Deadpool, which was really not a good time.
Why would you do that to yourself?
I think they knew there was going to be an audience going to see Deadpool, and I think they were counting on the exact opposite audience going and seeing this movie. However, cast of this movie, Lily James, who... I think Lily James just has a list of all of my favorite books and things, and she's like, I will be in all of those things. Sam Riley, a.k.a. Angsty Emo Raven from the Maleficent movies.
Oh, I liked him in Maleficent. I'd never seen him before, but I thought he was good.
He's the performance that I'll probably have the most to say about. My darling Matt Smith is Mr. Collins, who...
What?
Yeah.
Matt Smith is, like, 8 feet tall.
I agree.
How is he Mr. Collins? Mr. Collins is, like, my height.
He is...
like, 5 foot.
He is the, I agree. He is far too tall and attractive, typically, to be Mr. Collins, but he...
Debatable.
He... No, to play Mr. Collins.
Okay.
But he plays it exceptionally well. He's one of my favorite parts of this movie.
Okay.
Lena Headey.
Like Cersei Lannister?
Like Cersei Lannister.
Why?
Is Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Also one of my favorite parts of this movie.
Okay. So before we even start, let me just say one... She's way too good for this movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I guarantee you she's
absolutely.
Too good for it. Two, I'm really here for that.
If you're here for that, speaking of too good for this movie, Tywin Lannister, Charles Dance, is Mr. Bennet.
I don't even have, like, a witty comment. I'm just sitting here in disbelief.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Oh my God. Okay.
Again, I think, let's be real, all of these actors, all you have to do is come and tell them the title of this movie and that you want them to play these very iconic characters. And they'll be like, sure!
Yeah, if somebody came to me and they were like, hey, we're making the worst version of Pride and Prejudice imaginable, you get to play Lady Catherine de Bourgh, I'd be like, dope, I'm in,
yeah,
I'll do it.
Absolutely.
And so
I would have been in that crummy musical adaptation that was on Amazon Prime for a bit if they had asked me to.
You told me about that.
It's bad.
Okay, yeah,
it's
I don't
really bad.
Watch that one. I think I'll pass.
Yeah.
I was like so bitter about some of the hairstyle choices. Was it 2005 when Keira Knightley was in it?
Yes.
Not a bad movie. I'm just a snob.
My quick synopsis of it: gorgeous movie. Very unique adaptation. I don't mind it as an adaptation. Mm-hmm. Love the soundtrack. So I really like that movie. It's another one of those feel-good movies. I feel better and happier sitting down for my A&E miniseries.
I want 6 hours of it.
Yeah.
No less.
Absolutely. So giving you a sense of this movie, 45% Metacritic score and Rotten Tomatoes score, they tied for that one. And I can totally see why. Did you ever read this book out of curiosity?
What, Pride and Prejudice?
No, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, no, I read, what is the other one? Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer which mm-hmm. is by the same author.
Yes.
So I have a general idea of what to expect in terms of tone.
So Abraham, or sorry, excuse me. So Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is the actual text of Pride and Prejudice, just edited periodically to have zombies and ninja throwing stars and martial arts lessons thrown in.
Cool. And
I think a lot of the trailers for this really hyped it up to be much more zombie action filled, whereas it's much more Pride and Prejudice, much less zombies. And I think I said that when we were framing it last week.
Okay.
That being said, as someone who Pride and Prejudice is one of my favorite books of all time, I take giddy delight in this film and the different little homages to other adaptations of Pride and Prejudice that are in it. I love the cast. I have very unique thoughts on this Mr. Darcy. You will either love him or hate him. I actually happen to love him. It's just big dumb fun, and I'm here for the big dumb fun. It is, you'll get kind of frustrated with me given that last week was me just going like, this isn't faithful to Dracula. This is and I don't even
the hypocrisy.
I don't even mean the fact that there's zombies in it. I mean that like the end of this movie, you're gonna be like, what is happening? There's gonna be some characters that are very different, some outcomes for characters that are very different, but I'm really okay with it. I'm fascinated by this kind of clever world, and I love the cast, and it has my favorite rejection proposal out of any adaptation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, a few things.
Should I hear this by asking what you're expecting?
Yeah, do you have more to go over?
Okay. No, let me
tell you what I'm expecting from this film.
Yes.
I'm not going to talk yet about what I'm expecting from the film itself. I mean, what I'm expecting is literally what you told me. It's going to be exactly like Pride and Prejudice, except they're going to wield katanas and do backflips, and there's going to be a handful of zombies. Here's what I'm expecting for myself. Something to know about me is that I am a Pride and Prejudice snob. Like, it took me, like, I was that person, like, the first time I saw the Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice, I was, like, angry at it.
I was the same way. My feelings towards it have changed.
They have.
Only recently.
As I've grown older, I've let go a little bit of my snobbery, and I still have some critiques of that film. Like, Matthew McFadden is, first of all, so cute, and he's a great actor. I think he wasn't mean enough at the beginning to be Darcy. Like,
he's just very awkward.
The first time I saw Colin Firth, and he said the, like,
she's tolerable, I suppose.
Yeah, not handsome enough to tempt me. I was in sixth grade, and I was livid.
Yes, I hated him.
So mad. And by the end of the movie, I was so in love with Colin Firth.
Yeah.
Like, sixth grade me was like, there will never be another man better than this.
My funny story with that adaptation was that my mom would, like, just put it on in the background a lot of the time. And I would float through and be like, this is boring. And I'd leave and I'd float back in and I'd be like, this is dumb. And then I came in one day during, like, the infamous diving into the lake scene. And I was like, okay. I'm intrigued.
So the first time I saw it, I was at a sleepover. I had my friend Whitney over at my house. And we were trying to pick a movie and we could not decide on one. And she just was like, she just like grabbed, my mom had the first of all, it was a VCR box set.
There you go.
You know, where like all the pictures on the like bindings came together to make like a portrait.
Like bought from the library as it was closing.
Yes. So for some reason, she just got fed up at my inability to pick a movie and just grabbed it and put it on. Like, kind of passive aggressively. She was like, we're just gonna watch this. And like 10 minutes in, we both were like, oh. We stayed up the entire night. We went to bed at like 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
And we binge watched the entire thing. And it literally changed my life. So all that being said, I've read the book. I'm a bit of a purist. The A&E version is hands down the most accurate to the book.
Yes.
It did so many things right. And so every time I see an adaptation, I get really salty and I compare it really hard to the A&E version. And I try not to be that guy because, like, in my brain, I understand that adaptation is supposed to be fun and creative and that liberties should be encouraged. However, there's that part of my heart that's just like, but it's not Colin Firth, and it's not Jennifer L., and why would I care about any of this? I'm just, like, table flipping in the background.
Can I just say, this actually is kind of one of the things that helped me embrace different adaptations better, because it is so Coco Bananas out there that I don't sit there and compare it to the A&E.
Okay.
It is an entity of its own.
Okay.
And I cannot consider it anything else other than that.
Okay.
So this allows me to kind of loosen my corset strings, as it were, and just enjoy.
Get mud on your skirts.
Yes.
What is the line? Caked in mud.
Well, her petticoat, 6 inches deep in mud.
That's
I'm
it.
Absolutely sure of it. Guys, it's bad. I can recite entire passages
from
this
can.
Book.
Oh, goodness.
I think that's part of it, too, this for both of us, but this is one of my favorite books of all time. It means the world to me. A lot of Austin works do. And it's such a big part of my life that I feel like it's open to these other little windows and avenues of Austin fun. Can I be honest?
Yeah.
I really just want someone else to like this so that I can start assembling my Lizzie Bennet squad, and for Halloween one year I can go as the Bennet sisters with people, but like wielding swords and katanas and things. The costumes are awesome! They're so good. I wish you all could see Liv's face right now.
Girl. That is... I am here for this.
Do you want to make this a DragonCon thing?
Even if I hate this movie, I am here for the cosplay. Let's do it. Dude, who do you want to be?
Oh, man. Well, let's watch this.
Okay, and then we'll decide. Okay, so, all right, without further ado, we're going to go watch the film. We'll be back in a minute. We might take a break afterwards to discuss our cosplays some more. But,
right?
Yeah, so we will see you folks back in a few seconds for you guys.
Well, I had to get on here and hit record post-haste because poor Liv started screaming at me and she just turned the TV off and said, start recording right now, we need to talk right friggin' now! So, what are you thinking?
What the hell did we just watch? I have so much to say about this movie.
This is all I've wanted. All I've wanted in my entire life is someone to talk to me about this friggin' movie.
I'm gonna be honest. I was with you the first. Like, you know that Will Smith, it's not Will Smith. It's like the football kid who's like, they had us in the first half, not gonna lie. Like, I was with them in the first half. Like, the first half of the movie was great. Loved it. Super good. And then, I'm just gonna start rapid fire saying things that I had issues with.
Okay.
Because I just need to get them out of my system.
Okay.
Mr. Wickham is the Antichrist.
But let's be real.
I mean, it makes...
Don't you, don't you have so much fun saying that sentence? So Mr. Wickham is the Antichrist.
Okay. I don't hate that plot point. I really don't. I'm okay.
You can't tell me you don't like this movie.
The ending was so bad.
Go ahead.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the ending first. We're going to go back and talk about some other stuff.
But By the way, I think we should say this now. Spoilers, even though we just told you. If you couldn't have guessed that Wickham was going to be the Antichrist, now you know.
Now you know. And if you're planning on watching this movie, just know I'm going to tell you the ending right now, and you might even enjoy it more. Okay, so Wickham is the Antichrist. Wickham, instead of seducing Lydia to run away with him, like kind of kidnaps her, question mark?
Yeah, it's up for interpretation.
And holds her prisoner in, like, a church?
The Church of St. Lazarus.
Which is where the undead hang out.
Which is a very clever illusion, if you think about it.
Right, because Lazarus came back from the dead. Cool, got it, good, we're fine there. Darcy comes and confronts Wickham. And honestly... Darcy saves Lydia, and I had some issues. Issue one is that he didn't tell Lizzie where he was going to protect her.
Yeah, like, I'm not a fan of that.
Like, OG Darcy doesn't tell Lizzie where he's going, period. Like, he doesn't lie to her.
Yeah.
He just leaves because kind of has, like, a one-track mind and is like, I gotta go help.
Well, now, to be fair... him not telling her what his intentions are does actually cause Lizzie some suffering.
It causes Lizzie a lot of suffering, but the difference is, the way I've always interpreted the book is that Darcy was like, oh my god, gotta save Lydia before Wickham does to her what he almost did to Georgiana, he puts the blinders up and goes for it. Like,
intended to tell her or any of the Bennets what he was doing.
Yeah, he also didn't want the credit for it. Yeah. This was different.
This was different.
It felt different. Okay, so he saves Lydia. At first I thought Wickham was being overrun by zombies, but he's also their leader, so that part was just confusing to me. I didn't quite understand. But we're gonna let it slide. So then Darcy is outside the church, and he sends Lydia on a horse back to human civilization, and Wickham comes out and is like, I've been a zombie all along! Which was not the part I had a problem with. They start fighting. This is where my first problem really starts. They start fighting. It is pitch black outside. The sun has not been down that long. Like, the sun was up in the previous scene. Now it's pitch black and they're fighting. We cut back to Lizzie Bennet and crew, and when we get back to Mr. Darcy and Wickham, they are fighting with the same vigor that they had in the previous scene when it was the middle of night. But now it is the middle of day. How long have they been fighting? What is the time frame of this movie? What is the pacing of this movie?
The pacing is terrible.
They lingered on images so long. Yep. Like, there's literally, it's like the end of the film. The very end. So... hold on, I'll get there. I should go in chronological order.
When you say very end, are we talking the mid-credits?
The very end.
Mid-credits scene?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm going to stay in chronological order. Okay, Lizzie comes, she chops off Wickham's hand, she saves Mr. Darcy, and they ride away on a horse. Okay, right then, the red flag, of course, is that we don't see Wickham die. And then they go back. And there's this scene where they're, like, on this bridge. It's, like, the only remaining bridge are they in London?
Okay, so there's the City of London, which has the 100-foot wall around it. They never were actually in the City of London in this movie.
They're outside.
But there's the wall around the City of London, and then a few miles out, there's this canal. And then there's the space is called the in-between from this canal... to the Wall of London. So they're in the
No man's land.
They're in no man's land. Okay. And it's the last bridge connecting this no man's land to the happy English countryside.
Right.
Where they're zombies, but not the Hordo zombies.
So Mr. Bingley is like, we should wait for Darcy and Elizabeth to return. And Jane and Lydia are like, yes, let's wait. And then they keep waiting. And then they're like, we can't wait any longer. So Bingley orders them to blow up the bridge. And of course, who happens to ride up on a horse right after he's made the call to blow it up? Darcy and Lizzie. Cool, fine. They're riding. And of course, there's the big explosion. And
that looks pretty dope.
It looked pretty dope. But then Darcy, like... They fake us out. They make us think that Darcy's dead. Which I just don't like things in movies like that where they like fake us out. That's like fair. Like don't be like don't unjustly pull on my heartstrings. You gotta earn that, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're just like, Darcy's dead, and Elizabeth is like, I love you. I've loved you from the first moment I saw you. First of all, wrong.
That's not what she said.
What did she say?
She said my heart was irrevocably gone. Which
No. I'm not giving you this one. It implies that she had some feelings for him from the get-go. Which is
true. There is so much tension from the get-go. She's angry, yes, but like, come on. Come on. There is so much tension from the get-go.
Okay, there's definitely tension.
And this movie gets that and it doesn't.
Okay,
well.
The movie does the tension well. We're going to talk. Honestly, to me, I feel like I watched two separate movies.
The first half was a great Pride and Prejudice movie, and the second half was a bad zombie movie.
Yeah. Like halfway through, it feels like two different movies. Yep.
Okay, you have to talk about the mid-credits scene, though, before.
No, yeah, we're talking about everything that I hated about this film was in the second half, and everything I liked about it is in the first. So we're just going to go ahead and get the second half out of the way.
Okay.
Okay, so there's this melodramatic scene. First of all, she is crying over Darcy's either, like, dead/unconscious body.
Comatose.
We find out that he was unconscious later, a good 10 minutes later of thinking Darcy's dead. Okay, sure, fine, whatever. Sorry, I need a second.
She said that at least, like, 10 times while we watched this.
We had to pause it, and I had to go take walks.
Which we'll address those, because most of the time, it was, like, good reactions.
Yeah.
But get it out of your system, get your bad thoughts out.
Okay. The camera lingered on her holding Darcy's unconscious body and crying for, like...
too long.
A good 2 minutes with just no dialogue. Nothing. Just crying. I was like, chop chop, move on, next scene. Edit. Please, God, edit. Edit something. Cut it down. Trim the scene. Trim the fat. They cut out the dance number for that.
I completely agree with that critique, 100%.
We're gonna talk about the dance number later, and it... There was even a point where I said I understood why they took it out, and now that I saw how the movie ended, and the fact that they spent, like, 5 minutes on Darcy's unconscious body, why did they cut out the dance? Okay. Whew. We're salty now. Okay. So, finally we go back. They're all at Rosings Park now, hanging out with Lady Catherine de Bourgh, who we're also going to talk about later, because... there was so much wrong with it, but it was so right.
Yep. We'll go back. Keep going.
And Jane and Bingley get engaged, and everyone's like, woohoo, hooray! And then Darcy just shows up, and everyone's like, oh, Darcy, we're so glad to hear you're better. And it's like, first of all, how much time has passed? Second of all, me too, I guess. I mean... I just spent 10 minutes in the film thinking they killed off Mr. Darcy. So, like, yeah, me too, I guess. And then he's like, Elizabeth, can I speak to you? And, okay, that scene was honestly kind of great.
Right.
But then they start kissing.
It's a little much.
And, first of all, like, okay, let's talk time period. There's a few things that, if you know your history... and your social norms for Edwardian England, and even kind of more broadly, like European trends, like through 17 and 1800s, mm-hmm. you did not willy-nilly wear your hair down.
It's true. They're very fascinated with having Lizzie keep her hair down. Yeah. I will say, the 2005 Pride and Prejudice kind of opened a lot of doors for these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Elizabeth Bennet always wore her hair down.
Yeah.
But, like, there's one point where Caroline Bingley in that movie is wearing, like, a spaghetti strap dress. It's like, what?
Right.
There's, you know, moments when the hair is, like, I don't know, she does wear her hair down, actually, when she walks another film in the 2005 movie that's down and it's frizzy, yeah. or whatever. So, for me, I'm kind of like, you know what? This is not the first one to do all those historically inaccurate things. It will not be the last to do those kind of historically inaccurate,
yeah.
things. But I think what makes things that are more period accurate so effective is that when you watch that 6-hour Pride and Prejudice, mm-hmm. and the first time they kiss is when they're alone in the carriage, leaving at the very, very end.
You've waited so long. They've earned that kiss.
But then every moment, like, helping someone into a carriage or dancing and, like, brushing up against each other means 100%
more. So much
more,
because they can't kiss.
Yeah.
And it's not that, you know, kissing would have been, like, completely wrong in all regards. It just was reserved for certain,
yes.
things. And the hair, you know, I mean, like, Robert Browning has a poem or a story.
Yes.
Porphyria's Lover, right? The whole punchline is that Porphyria, the girl, lets down her hair, which is both a euphemism and a literal sign of intimacy. Having your hair down is something that you would only do in very intimate settings that at this time were really only earned, like, post-marriage.
Mm-hmm.
If a girl had her hair down in front of a man, that was considered highly improper. So Lizzie's hair is just, like, flying about willy-nilly in this, and I hate that it bugs me, but it does. Because I know the cultural context is, like,
yep.
That it. Anyways, this is not the horse I'm gonna die on.
Also, for most of this, your snobbery was being chiseled away. I feel,
yeah.
like you're only allowing this to be reforged
because you hated the ending. It was so silly in the first half that I was totally cool letting go most of it.
And let's be real, it's silly in the second half. It's just, yeah. not silly that you particularly,
yeah.
enjoyed.
It's just, I don't know how to explain it, because there's lots of films where you have kind of extensive kissing scenes,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of them have, like, cuts, and they're edited together from different angles that make it feel cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
This kissing scene,
it felt a little voyeuristic.
Yeah, first of all, it was long. Second of all, they had one camera angle that was an incredibly close shot, and I just felt awkward.
Yeah.
I felt like I shouldn't be watching it. And then they get married, and then
do it two more times, because there's two more kiss shots.
Yeah, and again, the kiss shots are in slow motion and excruciatingly long. But before you get to the kiss shots, Lizzie, Darcy, Bingley, and Jane walk out of the church after getting married in slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted forever.
Yes.
I was like, God, just end the movie. And then the credits rolled. And I thought, okay, it's over. I feel a little dissatisfied. What happened to Wickham? I'm okay.
To be fair, when I first saw this and I thought that had been the last shot of the movie, I thought, what an awkward shot to end on. And don't,
yeah.
get me wrong, the final shot is awkward, but in a much more goofy, for me, acceptable way.
Oh,
and
see,
I'll tell you why in a second, but I want to hear your thoughts.
So my feeling, the end shot is just them, like, looking off into the distance, kind of being married couples, and then kissing a lot, and the film ends, it fades to black, the credits roll, and then the credits stop, and you come back to the movie, and there's, again, an excruciatingly long shot of the four of them looking out somewhere. We, the audience, just see their faces, not where they're looking. And their expressions change from one of, like,
pure bliss
to utter horror. And finally, after, like, 5 minutes, it cuts and we see a zombie horde running towards Rosine's. Which, first of all, Rosine's is supposed to be the most fortified place in all of England right now. So, why were they not notified sooner? Second of all, Wickham is leading the charge. Third of all, Wickham has some, like, magic scepter thing.
No. That was, like,
what is he wearing? What was in his hand?
It's replaced his hand, because remember, his arm got chopped off.
Okay, but it was very melodramatic. And then they freeze frame on Wickham's screaming, charging face.
With the four horsemen of the apocalypse, you know, those important explained parts of the story.
Very briefly mentioned, but now the four horsemen of the apocalypse are there. And they freeze frame on that, and the film fades to black. And that was the end of the movie. Y'all, I don't know how to articulate how upset I am over the ending of this movie.
I want to know what about it upsets you. And is it just like, wow, what a dumb shot to end on? Or are you just disappointed that there's not a conclusion with Wickham, some big final battle, any of those things?
Both. It felt cheap. It felt lazy. It felt like they didn't want to actually resolve the Wickham thing. It felt like they didn't know how to keep it Pride and Prejudice and resolve the Wickham thing. Yeah. It felt lazy, both from a cinematic, from an editing perspective, from a cinematography perspective, it felt super lazy to end that way. Mm-hmm. From a storytelling perspective, it felt so lazy. It felt like, you know when you read, like, someone who's very clearly not a writer and they try to write, like, a short story, and then the last sentence is, and then he woke up and realized it was all a dream. Like, and you get to the end and you just feel so dissatisfied because you feel cheated.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt at the end of this movie.
I think that's perfectly fair. I think, so for me, the reason why I don't like it, mostly because I really want that big climactic final battle. But I think the reason why I'm more forgiving of it is what I said about, like, the first half of this movie is, like, a really silly, fun Pride and Prejudice adaptation, and then the bottom half is a bad zombie movie. And for me, I'm like, yeah, that's how the bad zombie movie ends. We thought we were safe, but we weren't!
Yeah.
And I can kind of roll with that, mostly because, like, we got the Pride and Prejudice ending. It ends with the two marriages, it's a comedy, it's happy. And yeah, they didn't know what to do with Wickham. I think if this movie had had a insane budget and were willing to spend the last, you know, 3 or 4 minutes with just this crazy showdown with all of them, it would have been great. I also feel like the only way that would have worked is if they hadn't forced in this friggin' Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse thing, because they're like, it's the end of days. So is it? Is it the end of days? Is Wickham going to defeat everyone and then nullify this happy ending? I don't know. I really hope not, because that would be the happiest of all endings, is if we slew Wickham, defeated the Antichrist, and... But we don't need these four horsemen of the apocalypse. They bring nothing to the table.
They bring nothing to the table. You know what would have solved the end for me a lot?
Tell me.
Okay. Two things. You're right. Get rid of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. I don't get why they're there. And then, instead of ending on a freeze frame with Wickham,
Cut back to
Lizzie and Jane, like, hiking up their skirts and pulling swords out of their, like, pantaloons, and the boys, like, rummaging underneath their top hats for weapons, and then have them, like, like, sigh, nod, and then start running, cut to black, would have been a better ending. I just hate freeze frame endings. My least favorite Harry Potter movie is the third one, and it's, honestly, it's the freeze frame ending made me so angry.
Oh, see, I like the third Harry Potter movie, but
I literally was so angry about the last scene that I have not forgiven the film to this day.
Okay. So, you can tell me before I move on to the thing I was going to say. Are there any other gripes that you want to express before I change subject a little bit here?
I think I'm okay.
She's like breathing like
I should probably preface this
you're
as well.
Sighing like Lily James does like 100 times just
I should preface this too, which with something that I think might also be the problem here. Zombies are my least favorite monster and my least favorite genre of horror film.
Yeah.
Not because I find them scary, because I find them stupid.
Yeah.
The origins of zombies, like, when you learn, like, the history of, like, where the zombie legends come from, that's super dope.
Yeah.
Which, if you have not ever heard about that, I'm gonna do a shameless plug for a YouTube channel I really like called, it used to be called Monstrum. Now it's called Storied, but there's still a show on it called Monstrum, and it's this woman, she's a doctor, and she studies folklore. And she has a whole thing on zombies and their origins. So if you're curious, go check that out. It's super cool. But yeah, I just don't like a lot of modern zombie films. I find them very boring. And it's kind of... The punchline is always that it's this, like, undefeatable threat, and we just keep fighting anyways. And yeah. I'm like, I want resolution. I want them to defeat the zombie horde. Please, just, or die
just
trying.
Once.
Just end.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think the problem for me, it's admittedly, the second half is a terrible zombie film.
Yes.
And for some people, terrible zombie films are their jam. For me, I find them highly annoying.
Yeah.
So, this film really lost me in the second half.
Okay.
But if you'd like to transition to the first half...
Well, before I do, I do want to offer my valid... What I feel is the most valid criticism of this movie in the second half. So, I can roll with the dumb zombie tropes. Mm-hmm. And also, I acknowledge that... Pride and Prejudice is a novel. The first half has a lot more, like, plot beats going for it, and it's, like, this. And it's a lot harder to translate that into a film like this, so I got why they had to rewrite the ending and make it more, pardon the pun, epic, bombastic. Yeah.
Get it? Because there was a bomb.
Lots
of bombs at the end.
Oh, like Bingley throwing in the grenade.
His little grenade and James saving him. That part was good.
See, that's good.
That was good.
we'll get to the combat stuff in a second. But I do not know how to feel about Darcy's plan of rescuing Lydia. So they do this thing where Wickham... is just irrefutably evil and wicked, because we know that he did try to seduce Darcy's younger sister, but more importantly, and I really liked this addition, we know that Darcy's father is dead in the original book, but in this one, it's made clear that it's Wickham who infects his father with the zombie strain, and then Darcy has to kill him, and you see how tortured he is over that, and I'm all for the ironic Byronic Darcy in this, but we'll get to him later.
Yay, Byronic heroes.
But they also do this thing where they try to make him sympathetic, where he's like, if I hadn't gone to war because you sent me there, I never would have been infected. This is your doing. And it's, so here's why it's weird, is that there's this kind of insinuation that the zombies are meant to represent the lower classes of people who can't defend themselves, or in this case, these, like, aristocrat zombies who are like the dignified people in the town can lead and control the other zombies, and Wickham is their great organizer and leader. But the thing is, and maybe it's more meant to assume that his plan was insincere when he went to Lady Catherine and asked for money to try and like build this group of zombies who fed on pig's brains so that they retained their humanity.
Which is a major plot point that we may need to touch on for our listeners.
So these zombies only lose their total humanity and become fully zombified after they eat human brains. So they can start to rot, but they can retain their mental human capacity and functions before they eat human brains. So there's this group of zombies that are eating pig's brains, and that's how they're not going full zombified.
And they're going to church every Sunday, like good Christians too, and that helps.
It's the going to church and taking their communion, which is the pig's brains. And it's very strange, and it's this, I don't know what the commentary is that Darcy comes back and to overthrow Wickham feeds them human brains that he's taken from soldiers who've lost their lives, and of course they all go ballistic and, you know, charge, and he thinks he's overthrown Wickham, but he hasn't. I don't know.
Darcy's the one who fed them brains?
Yes.
That's kind of evil.
That's my thing. I don't understand what the message there was. If it was supposed to be this message of, you know, Wickham is just so despicable and he's organizing this plan to overthrow all humanity, because we do see that on his little map, like, he's planning to overthrow everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So is that supposed to make what Darcy does justifiable?
Darcy doesn't see the map until he gets inside.
Exactly.
Darcy would have had to have done that earlier.
Yeah. Here's the thing. That, for me, that doesn't mess with Darcy's character. It just seems so poorly written as a plot point.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like that.
I will also say this. Darcy has also spent his entire life fighting the undead, and he's aware that someone is organizing the zombies, because we had that whole scene of him fighting in London. He knows that they're being, like, led and their strategy being in play. So it could be argued that he can foresee what Wickham's already planning. He also saw the four horsemen there. He knows, like, this is bad news.
But it just... I'm not trying to... I understand... How do I say this? This is gonna sound, like, kind of bad, because I'm about to, like, make a defense for the Antichrist character.
But that's the thing! The problem is
he's defensible!
He's
like, hey, could we have some money so that we could, like, find, like, support these zombies who are not eating people and, like, create a safe space for them and then form an allyship with them so that we can, like, not all perish. And then everyone is like, Wickham, you silly, nonsensical man, get out of this house. I'm Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Again, like, I think the implication is supposed to be that that was never his intention.
But they didn't show us that.
But they didn't show us that.
They did nothing to indicate that he was in any way multiplicitous. They just showed us a legitimately good idea to stop the zombie apocalypse.
Yes.
Made Wickham the one who had the good idea, and then made Darcy the person who destroyed the good idea.
Yes.
And then they were like, but you're supposed to like Mr. Darcy.
Yep. Again, I see the groundwork they were trying to lay there, mostly with his letter backstory. So at that point, we're supposed to be like, oh, so Wickham has done terrible things before this, right? But it's just like, I don't get it.
I mean, I had a lot of issues with the end.
Yeah.
And it kind of, I hate it, but it taints the beginning for me, because now I know where it's going.
Ooh.
It's like Game of Thrones. Like, the first few seasons are so good, but I still don't enjoy watching them because I know where it's going.
Right.
Like,
you know, Jon Snow's a baby on the wall, but, like, I know he's gonna grow up and kill Dany one day, so, like, I don't want to watch him, you know?
That's fair. Spoilers for Game of Thrones, by the way.
Sorry, we need to add, like, something at the beginning. Like, spoiler alert.
Lots of spoilers. Okay. Before you lose sight of this, though, I do need to make the audience aware of a couple things that happened in the middle of this. Number one, because I know there's things you like about this.
There are definitely. So, there is one thing in particular that I'm just going to go ahead and give you my rating.
Please do.
This is like a 2 out of 10 zombie brains for me.
Oh!
The ending really changed my opinion of it. This is definitely not my treasure. This is like dumpster fire, like chucking it across the room into the trash can. However, I would like to cut one scene out of this film, and it will go in, like, a golden pouch inside my treasure box. And I think you know what it is.
I think I do.
Why don't you tell the fine folks at home what this scene was?
Was this a moment where you had to pause and take a second?
Oh, yes.
So, I hope I'm saying the right one, because there were a couple of these. After Mr. Collins arrives at Logborn...
This is exactly the right scene.
He tells them how he works for
Lady
Catherine de Bourgh, played by the right honorable Lena Headey. And it immediately cuts to this shot with this big dramatic music as she's standing on a pile of zombies, and she wields her katanas over her head in an X. Her eye is gouged out, and the music's like, bah, bah! And it cuts to total silence as it goes back to them sitting at the breakfast table.
It's amazing. And also, just to increase this picture, she's literally standing on a pile, a mountain of zombie corpses, and she is wearing black leather pants, black riding boots, a black tunic with a black corset over top of it. And I think there might have been a cape.
Yep, there's a cape.
And her eye's gone. And I was like, stop the movie. And then I just walked out into the hallway and I just laid down for a second. Because
she needed a moment.
I needed a minute. For some reason, the editors decided to actually use some editing skills. Yeah. I mean, it's intentionally campy.
It's amazing.
It's meant to be bad. And it is the best scene in this entire movie.
Yep.
Oh, it's so good.
Yep. Now, okay, to be fair. So, I know that the ending ruined the beginning for you. But there were other things that you said you liked in the beginning. And I do
I love the first half.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's switch over to the good. I'm gonna start with the good that surprised me. When you told me Matt Smith was Mr. Collins, I was like, no. He was great.
Right?
He was fun. I loved his dancing at the ball. It was terrible, and every wonderful Mr. Collins-y thing that he could have done. He trips over himself, he fumbles, he's a complete ass the entire time. And I am here for it. Mm-hmm. I liked his Mr. Collins. I liked how insufferable he was. So he was great. I mean, Lily James really is always pretty good.
I like Lily James.
Yeah, she's very likable. So she was good.
She understands this character too.
This is something that I hope this doesn't come across as mean, but I feel like it's going to. One thing I told you at the beginning, in most Pride and Prejudice adaptations, they always bring up the fact that Jane is the prettiest Bennet sister. Mm-hmm. But they intentionally cast it so that Lizzie is the prettiest Bennet sister. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, Jane is the most beautiful of the Bennet siblings. And then they'll cut to Jane and she's like really homely and awkward looking.
But 9 times out of 10, she's blonde and that she's the only blonde.
And yeah, and that's what makes her pretty. This one was like, here's Lily James, she's pretty. Here's Jane, she's a model. Which I appreciated the fact that she was very beautiful, because it felt right for Jane. She looked very sweet, and she's a great Jane. I really liked her. The kid who played Bingley grew on me. At first, I was like, isn't he that dude from, like, Gossip Girl or something? but then he was cute. I liked that Bingley was kind of a delicate flower. That was right for Bingley. Let's see.
Okay, if I hadn't told you that thing about Darcy in the end, would you have liked this Darcy throughout?
How do I put this? Do I like him as Darcy? No.
Do you like this character?
Do I like this character? Do I like sad boy Colonel Darcy? Because he's called Colonel Darcy in this one, not Mr. Darcy. Do I like sad boy zombie slaying Colonel Darcy? 100%.
Right?
Is he Mr. Darcy from the books? Not in the slightest. Not even a little bit. But let me tell you my favorite thing about him. So he has his proper Edwardian riding coat that he wears all the time.
But it's leather.
Black leather riding coat. Wonderful. I want to shake the hand of whoever designed these costumes. They were great. They were so good. Yep. They did a really good job of towing the line between absurd kung fu movie like weirdness and period accurate costuming.
Right?
Like the hair was not accurate.
Yeah.
But the costumes, the dresses were pretty spot on the point.
That first blue dress that Lizzie wears, I look at the shoulders. Blue dress
wasn't,
not
the blue dress wasn't great.
But I don't care, because when she like kicks her feet up over her head to kick down a zombie, it looks so good.
It looks great, yeah. The fighting choreography was just fun.
It's so much fun.
It's just fun. I don't know enough about fighting to tell you if it was good or bad.
I just have fun.
But I
have
enjoyed it immensely.
I have fun watching the Bennett squad goals scene where they walk into the party.
Five Bennett sisters killing a horde of zombie at a ball was everything I've ever wanted. And I still want to cosplay it. I'm gonna add a few more things that I didn't like. You know, no offense to these actors or this actress. Charles Dance as Mr. Bennett was forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't bad, but he didn't stand out.
He was very protective, and they were so focused on that he kind of lost a little bit of his
personality.
Humor.
Yeah. I could not stand Mrs. Bennett. She's boring.
She's one of my least favorite Mrs. Bennets. I think that's fair.
I mean, come on. If Mrs. Bennett bores you, you've messed up the film. If she's not going, fetch me my smelling salts, then you've done it wrong. If she comes, like, she comes in, she's like, girls, Netherfield Park is let at last. And I'm like, she's supposed to be like, Netherfield Park is let at last. We're gonna get you married. Woohoo! Like, if she's not crazy when she runs in the door, it's wrong. And
okay, but like, the one other thing that I have to talk about that you did like.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Where you were like, wait. I'm backtracking here. Experience that I had seeing this movie for the first time in theaters, I was with my other Jane Austen loving friend and my mom, who just made me absolutely fall in love with Jane Austen as a child. When he's giving his sad backstory, and there's just this shot of him outside, like, approaching somewhere. You can't see where he is, but he's in this, like, white shirt that's, like, undone at the collar, and you went, wait.
Oh,
and in the theater,
the scene.
I grabbed my friend's thigh and went, wait. And then you said, are they gonna do it? And I, too, said, are they gonna do it? And it cuts back, and he dives into a
Yay!
Lake for no reason at all.
It's literally just the most shameless homage to the A&E version.
Yes.
Because it's not in the book at all.
There's no reason for him to do it.
But you know what?
It's great.
It needs to be there. And let me tell you why. It's because I like a man in a wet white period piece shirt, okay? It's all I want.
These are the kind of changes to adaptations that we need.
Yes. keep the hair period appropriate and let Darcy swim in the lake.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I will commend them for doing that. So yes. Kudos to them for that scene. Kudos to them for, mainly kudos to Lena Headey.
Yep.
And kudos for the costumes, because they were awesome.
Gosh. Every like, kick flip, everything in those costumes.
So great. But yeah, so overall, fun first half, garbage second half.
I accept this. Still in my treasure pile. I've known about the problems with it ever since I first saw it, because I remember going, what? If it makes you feel any better at all, there are some wonderful fix out there for the end of this movie.
You know, when media is bad, fan fiction is always there to make it just a little
There's
better.
Some really good, like, hey, here's what I think happened after Wickham charged in with his random spike hand.
So here's our recommendation. Watch the movie halfway through, and as soon as Wickham takes Lydia, stop it, find a fan fiction, and enjoy. So, yeah, two out of ten brains, and this has been Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, guys.
much less spoopy than
last week.
Than last week.
So just a quick kind of explanation of where we're planning to go here and what we are hoping to accomplish. So for a period of 4 weeks, we're just going to go back and forth showing each other movies that one of us loves and the other one has either never seen or hasn't seen in a really long time. Yeah. So that we can kind of go with fresh eyes. Every fifth movie, we're going to do something different. So this week, we're going to start with a film that both of us have seen and love. Some other weeks, we may do movies that neither of us have seen or ones that we both hate so that we can just tear them to shreds. Or, if you kind people feel so inclined, hit us up on Instagram or Twitter. Information will be in the outro at the end of this video. Mm-hmm. And we will, hopefully, if you are so inclined to send us your recommendations, mm-hmm. We will gladly add those in. And every fifth week, we'll watch something that either we both like, we both hate, or that you guys choose.
Yep.
So
I think we've decided what we're going to do next week.
Yeah, I think we've got a plan.
Yeah. So,
24601.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So, yeah. We're starting next week. Our first joint film is going to be Tom Hooper's Les Misérables. And we've got a lot to say about it.
Yes. I feel like this is going to be another one that, like, I don't know. I feel like this is another one that I'm going to be probably less cynical and critical of.
I'm very critical of it.
I'm really not.
I really enjoy it. I love it. But I also love trashing it. And I also kind of love giving Tom Hooper a hard time. We'll talk about that next week.
Yes, I'm fine with that. He
deserves it for Cats, okay?
Yes, I have no problem with trashing Tom Hooper.
We'll talk about that too.
By the way, I don't even want to. It's so funny. I think part of why we started this ultimately started with you showing me Man in the Iron Mask, but it also kind of started with us watching Cats together.
That's so true. You know what? We're gonna watch Cats on this channel at some point.
Oh, not soon. Please, not soon.
Not soon, but we'll do it at some point.
Oh gosh.
I've got so much to say. I'm the weirdo that, like, loved Cats, but not for the reason that you're supposed to love Cats. Like, I love train wreck movies. I love trashing movies that are really bad.
Yep.
And so I had a wonderful time watching Cats. But we will save some of those stories and some of my critiques for another day.
Yep.
So, thank you for coming on this journey with me. I'm sorry that it was...
You know, you promised me, you know, I asked for the carriage, and you were like, no, you must go on horseback. There's, like, rain clouds in the distance.
I thought you'd get stuck at Netherfield with me. But instead...
I was very relieved to get to go back to Longsfield.
Longbourn?
Longbourn. What? What did I say? Longsfield.
I don't know.
I think I just lost my, like, Jane Austen fan card.
You and I are just gonna go hightail it up to Pemberley and watch the A&E version for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Alright, well, good night, fam, or good afternoon whenever you're watching this.
Have a wonderful week.
Yeah.
Have a wonderful day.
Peep, peep.
Pip, pip. Gotta follow it up with a cheerio.
Keep it British.
Because that's what British people say.
Oh, sorry if you're from England.
I hope the Irish fans enjoy that.
That's true. It's okay to make fun of the British, I think.
Thank you, international listeners.
Yes, thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
Maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at Liv and Lizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trashy you feel, you are deeply treasured.
Bye!